Open our eyes, Lord, that we might see. Open our ears that we might hear. Open our mind and our heart that we might understand, so that we will turn to you and live.
Last week, I mentioned that we were going to be spending 2 weeks in the parable of the sower. Last week, we began looking at the sower and three of the four types of soil that Jesus will go on to teach and explain in his parable to his friends. We started with just, if you weren't here, just a little bit of a review. And I'm going to do a little bit more teaching like I did last week, but Jesus began with God as the generous sower, that God is sowing God's life liberally, that it's in God's very nature to throw life at our doorstep. The question is, will we have an imagination for where that life might find its way? Will we have eyes to see? Jesus goes on to describe four types of soil. We'll be with the fertile, good soil today, but the three types of soil we sat with last week, and again, depending on how you've heard this taught or preached before, oftentimes I have heard it explained in a very binary fashion. You are either good soil or you are one of the three. Please check the box that applies and turn it in at the end. But I invited us, what I hope is a little bit of a different way of seeing it, that within each of us, within our stories, within our souls, our bodies, our relationships, that there are, all of these soils are actually present. That what God longs for is for there to slowly over time to become an integrity about us. These different types of soil, there's the hard places. Those are those places in our lives that are resistant to God's life because the path is hard and it's busy. The rocky places are the places in us that are resistant to life because the rocky places are shallow and hard. They're mixed ground. There's some softness, but there are hard places that are not allowing for the growth. God's life is unable to take root. We can put seeds in the ground, but if we fail to tend to the rocks, there won't be actual any depth. That there are places in us that are resistant to life. They are thorny places. They're soft soil, but they are crowded soil. Good things growing next to not so good things. There's a lot of competition. Jesus, in today's reading, will go on to describe what those things are, that we are being choked. Life, the very life of God in us, is being choked by a variety of cares, of riches, of pleasures. All things that are good things, but are things that can also prevent the things of God, the life of God, the fruit-bearing potential of God's life, the freedom that God longs for you and for me to actually experience, to wither before it puts down deep roots. Which brings us to the fifth movement, if it's all one thing, which is the fruitful places. Jesus, back in verse 8, says, other seeds fell on the good soil and brought forth grain. And I love the diversity of the fruitfulness. For some, it was 100-fold. For some, 60, and for some, 30. Jesus offers in this parable us an image of good, clear, receptive soil. Soil, which is to say souls, that have been tended to, that have been cleared, that are prepared. And so the question before us, one of many that I'll offer to us this morning, is what is good soil? What's an example of good soil? Sometimes you don't know the soil's good until you hold it, until it gets tested. What does it look like? And this isn't just the Sunday school answer. I would argue Jesus is the image of the good soil. In a similar way, Psalm 1 that opens the Psalter, it is the door through which you enter into the Psalms, describes a tree planted by streams of living water, bearing fruit in season and out of season. The psalmist invites us to consider our own lives. Are we like the tree? But the deeper invitation there is to understand that Jesus is the tree planted by streams of living water. Jesus is the image of good soil. And I think there are three things I want to draw our attention to about the life of Jesus, as a way of understanding what it means to become not only like him, but to become good soil. The first thing I think, if you spend any time with Jesus, keeping company with him, whether here or in the Gospels, One of the things you notice is that there is no duplicity in Jesus. There is no duplicity in Jesus. Jesus is the same on the outside as he is on the inside. Part of the movement of good soil is a movement from duplicity into genuineness. The second thing is that Jesus responds to people with attentiveness, with attention, with acceptance, and with care. Jesus is living, breathing compassion. Even when Jesus is frustrated and has a hard word to say, not only to the religious leaders, but also to his friends, it is life, breathing compassion. So we tell our kids all the time, sometimes it's not what you say, it's how you say it. The movement toward good soil is a movement from sin, a life that is curved in on itself into a holy life that is open to others. The third thing you notice about Jesus is that Jesus is totally, utterly surrendered to his mothering father. He is totally and utterly surrendered to his mothering father. Part of this movement toward good soil is that more of us is moving away from self-centeredness to a deep yieldedness to God. This, I would argue, is what we mean when we say holiness. We look to Jesus. I think we tend to think of holiness as Jesus did what was right and didn't do what was wrong. That is such a flat, one-dimensional understanding. To look to Jesus is to see one in whom there is no duplicity, who is attentive and gives his attention and his acceptance to others, and who is totally surrendered to his mothering father. That I would offer as an image of what it means to tend to those places in us that are good soil. And so the question is, I have an older mentor who often says he writes in his books in the margins, YBH. Maybe I've mentioned this before. He says, my books are full of YBH, which stands for yes, but how? Yes, but how? Verse 23 this morning, Jesus says, but as for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who, he's going to give us the YBH. Here's the word. And understands it, and indeed bears fruit. Yes, but how? How do we hear the word? And again, depending on how you've heard this taught, most of us, when we hear that, we think this, the Bible. But as I've mentioned before, it's not that. That is, again, a very flat way of hearing what Jesus is saying, because in the passage this morning, what is it? It is the word of the kingdom. It's not your Bible. It's the word of the kingdom. It's the good news that the kingdom of God is radically available to all people in all places at all times. We're going to hear a lot from the Gospel of Matthew over the coming weeks. I get a break for 3 weeks. You get a break from me for 3 weeks. And so Lori's going to preach, and then Brendan, then Lori again. Lori and I spent some time this week talking through some parables that some of us love, and then it gets into some parables that I sort of am sorry that it got handed off to you. And so thank you for that. But one of the parables, Jesus is going to spend a lot of time in the Gospel of Matthew saying the kingdom of God is like, and then give us an image and give us a story. One of the stories he will use as a way of explaining this is that you and I, everyone, stands on the edge of a field. And somewhere in that field, there is a priceless treasure that is the transformational reign of God that conforms us to the likeness of Jesus, that we might become a light to the world, that in that field, there is a buried treasure, and that's the treasure, and it's offered to us. And Jesus says, all you need to do is sell everything you have and buy the field. To which the question I most often ask is, but you mean that figuratively, right? Isn't the image of good soil intended to be taken figuratively? Aren't we taking this a little too serious? If you're asking that question, you're in very good company. I ask that question all the time. Do you really? And this is often what holds me back in my life with God. I require some clarifications to exactly what it is I need to surrender. Okay, Jesus, here is the list of everything in my life. You don't mean this, surely, right? And I think in a moment of honesty and clarity, maybe I'm not as hungry for God and for the kingdom of God as I would like to think. Earlier in the Gospels, Jesus has an interaction with, we're not given his name, all we're told is it's a rich young ruler. And he comes to Jesus saying, what must I do to live an eternal kind of life? And Jesus says something similar to him, sell all you have. To which I want to respond, why are we always so extreme? If your eye causes you to lust, cut it out. Come on, please just calm down with the drama. As if we can only serve one master. And the rich young ruler, do you remember what his response is? He turns away. Everyone has a choice. Jesus is continually inviting us to take ownership of our agency. The rich young ruler turns away. But I wonder what would have happened if the story would have ended differently. What if the rich young ruler would have said, I don't know that I can do that. I don't know if I'm ready, but will you teach me as I follow you? What do you think Jesus would have said? Come on. Jesus is in the business of taking on persons who are not quite ready to surrender everything. Thanks be to God. Right, you have Peter's famous confession. You are the Messiah, A plus 4.0. And immediately then turns and rebukes Jesus and says, you can't say that. Peter doesn't get dismissed. Peter becomes one of Jesus' friends to begin this movement that we are still a part of called the church. Peter's flub is really good news for me, and it may be good news for some of you too. That you can make a confession of faith and a lack of faith at the same time. That disciples can understand in part and not in full what it is for Jesus to be Lord. I believe, help my unbelief. For those who hear the word of the kingdom. Doesn't mean we fully understand it, but we hear it. The radical availability of the transformational reign of God in our lives. That life doesn't have to be this way. Life doesn't have to be this way. Jesus says it's those who hear, but also those who understand. And the question I would ask is, how are we learning? That same mentor who writes YBH also pushes me often to drop the word trying from my vocabulary. He's got a thick South African accent. He goes, I wonder if you would maybe trade that out for learning. I like that. A lot less shame attached. I'm trying. I'm learning. How are we learning to understand the good news of the kingdom? There's a posture of humility that we're invited into. The phrase we use often, that always we begin again. Which sounds good in theory, until we actually bump up against our own limitations, that maybe I'm not as smart or as competent as I would like others to think I am. And to understand, to learn, what Jesus is not speaking of here is just simple information transfer. But by living into it, by attempting and reflecting, by actually walking and living into what Jesus invites us into. It's why Jesus later will say, if anyone comes after me, let them deny themselves and follow me. Tending to the good soil, tending to the soil of our lives and paying attention to the thorny places, to the rocky places, to the hard places. All of this, finding the treasure, is to enter into an overall way of life with Jesus. Of learning to despair of life on our own terms in order to seek first the loving rule of our mothering Father. Which again, sounds good, but we resist it. Why do we resist it? Well, Jesus repeatedly diagnosed the problem of why we refuse to tend to the soil of our lives, why we never begin to look for the buried treasure at all. It's almost as if we're just content knowing it's there. That's good. It's out there somewhere. I guarantee you that if I told you there was $10,000 taped to the underside of one of your chairs, none of you, and I mean none of you, would be like, it's there, it's fine. I'm good knowing that it's there. Every one of you, you would be surprised at the speed of some of the people you're sitting next to and how fast they're able to unhook these chairs and flip them over. So why do we never dig holes? Why do we never tend to the soil of our souls, of our lives? Jesus often referred to people and saying, oh, ye of little faith. I don't ever think he was like, God, you of little faith. I think a lot of times it came out playful. Oh, you little faith. Like a childhood nickname. Little faith. Jesus knows that many times I lack the strong confidence in Jesus and in his way of life. I just lack the confidence of Jesus and his way of life. For some of it, it was for a long time I was a part of traditions that the only thing we ever talked about when it came to Jesus' life was how much you didn't measure up and Jesus lived a life that you couldn't. Okay, maybe. The problem with that is none of Jesus' friends understood that that's what Jesus was doing. Peter and James, Mary, weren't sitting around going, God, we can never do this. Thankfully, he's going to go to the cross we don't know about. They believed the reason why they gave up everything and risked everything to follow him was because they believed they could be immersed in his life, the way he did things, and slowly become those kind of people. Oh, ye of little faith, I lack the strong confidence in Jesus and in his way of life. Or as Paul will say, the desires of the flesh and the desires of the spirit are opposed to each other. Right? That's the heart of the tension in the Christian faith and discipleship and walking with Jesus, is that our willpower is actually quite weak. Walking the Jesus way begins and ends with us coming to the end of ourselves, bumping up against ourselves and our best efforts to change. And at that moment, if we're willing for it to be, it is a fertile moment for us to open ourselves up to hear once again the good news of the kingdom. An example very quickly of this, what I'm talking about. In Matthew 6, Jesus tells his friends, both then and now, do not be anxious. Wouldn't it be awesome if that's how it worked? I had a counselor one time. I met with them once. That was their approach. Said, hey, I think I have anxiety. Jesus says, don't be anxious. Okay, do I pay now or do I pay on my way out? Like, thanks for, awesome, I'm fixed. Said, hey, I think I have some unprocessed trauma. He wanted to talk about idols. And I was like, I don't know where this is going. I don't think it's good. And does that work alone to solve our anxiety? No. God teaches that the cure for anxiety is a gradual entrusting ourselves to the competent care and mercy of God. Something that is taught over and over again and is understood over time. In the midst of real experiences within life. Paul himself learned that the secret of being content, and it wasn't a secret that was downloaded to him because he attended a first century TED talk. It didn't just strike him one day while he was out on a walk between Philippi and Colossae. He had to learn that the secret is that there is a profound sufficiency available in the strengthening presence of Jesus. In 1 Corinthians 12, Paul will say, there was a time before now when I was discontent of my thorn in the flesh. But Paul himself, who he says, I had to learn this, learned that the empowering presence of Jesus was matured in him as he embraced his weakness. It's why he will go on to the church in Colossae praying. And he says this, he goes, I pray that you would be filled with the knowledge of God's will so as to walk in a manner pleasing of the Lord. What he's not praying for is instantaneous change, but to be filled with knowledge and wisdom and lived experience. The Jesus way is a learning way. The formation of our souls, the tending of our souls is a pathway of inward transformation. And it isn't an easy one, which again, I'm quoting him a lot today, which is why Jesus will say in Matthew 7, the way is difficult that leads to life. It's the famous, if not infamous, G.K. Chesterton quote quote, "The Christian ideal has not so much been tried and found wanting as much as found difficult and left untried," unquote. I don't know about y'all, but I think the church has a credibility crisis. On a large level, the church right now is riddled with scandals, failures in the church, and it's everywhere. It's in every denomination, every non-denominational movement, network, everywhere. There is nowhere you can go that there is not scandal riddling the church. In our personal lives, there's credibility crisis, what Parker Palmer has called tragic gaps in who we say we are and how we actually live it out. And it isn't just in the church. I belong to an HOA that has access to an app called Nextdoor. And if you think the credibility crisis is just in the church, you should sign up for Nextdoor. I'll give you my login. Every institution, there's a credibility crisis. Because what is needed in this moment, and this is what I meant earlier when I was talking about, y'all, we can't do things that are more exciting than Fridays After Five. The brunch and the justice opportunities that we have to engage in. Like, there's just, we can't top that. That's not what our call is. It's to engage in those things, it's to be present in those things, to partner in those spaces. But the call of God, the reason why the church exists, is to create space for people to be formed. Richard Foster, in the this is literally the opening line of his book, Celebration of the Discipline, says this: "Superficiality is the curse of our age." He wrote that in the 70s? 70s. Superficiality is the curse of our age. He goes on to say, "The doctrine of instant satisfaction is a primary spiritual problem." That's before prime shipping. "The desperate need today is not for a greater number of intelligent people or gifted people, but for deep people." The question is, how do we who remain of little faith, learn to prioritize the reign of God above all else as Jesus did? How do we tend to the soil of our souls? How do we walk in the Spirit and not gratify the desires of the flesh, even as the desires of the flesh are in opposition to the desires of the Spirit? These are the questions of spiritual formation. These are the questions that God has given to the church to wrestle with and to walk out. And these are questions that we're going to be sitting with quite a bit moving forward. Because all of us have a formation. All of us do. The question is, who is our teacher and whose image are we being formed into? Again, in the context of what we were talking about earlier with our children, growing up in an evangelical background, there are tensions I feel with what we have been dreaming up and with what we have been doing. There are tensions I feel sometimes when my kids are like, "I don't want to go to church." It's like, well, okay. But the reality is, we all have a formation and we're all being formed. To pay attention to, like, just because someone else didn't do it well doesn't mean we don't begin to reimagine with Jesus. So I'm going to give us in less than 5 minutes, a high overview of what it is we're talking. How do we become good soil? How do we tend to those places? And I'm going to use a metaphor that is going to break down on every level, but it's that of gardening. Invite us to see our souls and our lives as a garden that is connected to other gardens. A garden that is not our own, that we are invited with the master gardener to co-labor. Who cares? Because the master gardener cares about it far more than we ever could, longs for its flourishing more than we ever could. So we're invited in that context to tend. And our gardens are connected to many other gardens, but all of our gardens is life in the context of the divine Trinity and life in the community of God's friends. It's where all formation happens, in the community of the divine Trinity and in the community of God's friends. It's organic and it's intentional. There are some plants that are you don't want to mess with too much. You just kind of want to let grow. And there are other ones that if you let grow, you'll never have any salsa. Just let a tomato plant grow. You won't have any salsa, which is the, aside from marinara sauce, is the only intentional outcome of any good use of tomatoes. All formations must be well tended to, and they grow best with intention. But there's also diversity. Any garden we admire is diverse. Formations that will go through different seasons, that pull from different traditions, that come out of different stories, recognizing that what unifies us all is the master gardener. It's the garden of our lives. But then the next two, I want to give us the image of a seed and then the image of three tools. The garden is life in the context of the divine Trinity and life in the community of God's friends. The seed is the good news of God's life in Jesus being offered to our lives. Not in theory. This isn't a bunch of facts. It is the actual power and presence of God offered to us through the Spirit for here and now. God sows liberally and generously. A lack of experience I have found in my own life of the power and presence of God has nothing to do with God holding back. It has everything to do with just my failure to pay attention or to tend well. And that brings us to three tools. And again, it all breaks down. I went back and forth on which tools to use, but three images. A shovel or a trowel, a rake, and a watering can. The shovel or the trowel, I attach the word image. I think this comes first because I would argue that necessary to formation into the likeness of Jesus is two things. First is a Christ-like image of God. Many of us, I've said this so many times and I'll continue to, have been handed an image of God that is un-Christ-like, and there is nothing about God that is un-Christ-like. So if you've been handed an image of a God who is just literally hell-bent on destroying you and all that you love, that is un-Christ-like. We need to wrestle with that. We need to wrestle with the fact that we have taught that for centuries. Not all the church. We need a Christ-like image of God, but also we need a healed and holistic image of self. That you and I are beloved image bearers. That we are way more complicated than many people give us credit for. And the most foundational truth about any of us is that we are beloved. That's the shovel. The rake is the second thing. That is reality. I didn't even realize till now it was an R and an R. Now I'm regretting the rest, but here we are. Reality is the second tool because it's vital we recognize that life with Jesus takes place in our actual lives. Not the lives we pretend to have, not the lives we fantasize about, but real life. Formation does not take place in life simply lived, though. Though certainly we are being formed in ways we're not aware of. Formation can take place best when we are reflecting on the different movements of where God was present and where we walked away in the everyday, ordinary moments of our lives. Our lives are the garden. Our souls are the garden. The seed is the very life of God. We're invited to take a shovel to make rows, paying attention to our images of God and our images of self. To rake out the rocks, to pay attention to the reality of our lives. And as God plants, we're invited to water. The watering can, the sustaining practices, the classical spiritual disciplines of Jesus are the ways we create space for the deepening of God's life in our life. They aren't magical. There's nothing magical about the disciplines themselves. They just simply create space for the deepening of God's life in our life. There are personal disciplines like meditation and prayer, fasting, study, simplicity, solitude. There's corporate disciplines like confession, worship, and celebration. All of these in their own unique ways for unique seasons invite us to drop down into the deeper places of our lives and to not do so alone, but to do so with God and with God's friends, to explore the inner places of our lives and the inner caverns of the spiritual realm. You can plant a seed, but if you don't water it, maybe it grows. The rain comes across every now and then. But you know, if there's not intentional space being created for the deepening of God's life in our life, we can't be surprised when there's no salsa. Our lives are perfectly designed to get the results they're getting. And so will we hear? Will we work to understand? And beloved, you are free to choose. But as we tell our children, we're free to choose. We're not always free to choose the consequences. It's a hard reality of life. And the choice in front of us is either toward wholeness and freedom or away from it. There's no neutral option. We are either moving toward wholeness and freedom or we are moving away from it. The way away from it is the path of the rich young ruler. The path toward it is the path of someone like Mary Magdalene, who took risk, who left it all, and who at the end found the treasure. Did not mean a life of ease, did not mean a life without loss, but it was a life of freedom and it was a life of wholeness that she had never experienced before coming in contact with this person named Jesus, who introduced to her the good news of the kingdom, its radical availability. She was a nobody and went on to lead the church and to give us an image of what it means to be the friend of God. And so, Holy Spirit, would you come? Would you help us in just the next few minutes to just listen, to pay attention? And pray for my friends, would you bring an image, a word? Perhaps it caught their attention before, perhaps it does it even now, but would you give them the grace to hold it, to be curious about it, to be curious about the resistance, to be curious about the joy. And so friends, maybe there is an image or a word. Perhaps it encouraged you or challenged you. When things stand out, most often it is God offering guidance, help, healing, wholeness, and life. So what does that say about where you are? What does God want to say to you? For just a moment, I'll invite us to just speak to God and listen. Allow in the words of the psalmist for deep call to deep.
The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.